Hey, welcome to Old School Guns, the podcast that tells you like it is. This is episode number 60. So, if you're following, we've got 60 episodes out there. Certainly, I think the later ones are better than the earlier ones, but that's just me. So, got a lot of wood to chop today and some interesting things to talk about. So, as you well know, this podcast is based into three sections. A little bit about politics in 2A, some more about the gun culture and gun media, and then the third is questions and answers, which is, you know, really my favorite part. I really kind of enjoy that the most because it forces me to think before I actually say something. So I really kind of like that one. The rest of it is all what it is. And we'll start out by talking about, you know, the impeachment's over. It ended the way we thought it would. It's basically done. It's not even, nobody even really thinks that it's worth a hoot. But the biggest thing on the radar screen right now is, well, the 2020 primary season has started. And, you know, it's actually been kind of interesting. That is, of course, unless you're responsible for the debacle in Iowa. But I think what we're seeing now is, it looks like sleepy Joe Biden, good old quid pro Joe. I think he's had it. This guy has, you know, he looks really bad. His poll numbers are terrible. And he's losing ground to, of all people, Bernie Sanders. And Sanders, you know, is an old-time socialist. He embraces, I'm a democratic socialist. And the Democrats are panicking. The Democratic Party is panicking. Because they look at their host of candidates, they have no charisma. You know, there's not a single one with any charisma. And say what you want to about Donald Trump, he's got charisma, he's got personality, and that's you know, a big advantage, a huge advantage. So you got Biden, no energy, no charisma. You got Bernie, a little bit of charisma, not much, but a little bit anyway. But then you've got these horrid Klobuchar and Warren. You know, Warren is never going to get over being the fake Indian, you know, the Pocahonky or whatever she is. I mean, she is terrible. She is a fake Indian. She is the person, and you know what? It's going to come out eventually that somehow she used her fake lie about being a Native American to get ahead somewhere, whether it was admission in school or somewhere. That'll come out. But, you know, the personality-wise, though, is there anyone more unlikable? I mean, she's up there, Hillary Clinton, unlikable. I mean, she appears to be a condescending, you know, just this really package. You look at her and go, ew, you know, just ew. And as I said before, she's the third-grade teacher you hated. You don't want to be around. And so if you want that for 4 years talking down to you in that condescending manner, then that's the candidate. But yeah, she's terrible. This Klobuchar, I mean, first of all, what does she even stand for? Nobody knows. She never says anything that makes any sense anyway. And like I had said in a previous podcast, she's like the librarian you hate. She's the grammar school librarian who's telling everybody to be quiet, shushing them in the library. Nobody's paying attention. Buttigieg, too many problems. There are a lot of even the Democratic core constituencies of certain minorities and certain ethnicities don't really like homosexuality, and they're not going to turn out. This guy isn't going to be the gay Barack Obama, who comes out and basically enthuses their base. This guy's just, I don't see where he's going to go anywhere at all. He does have the advantage of being younger, and he can kind of get into the race and maybe last it out, but I just don't see a big future for him. Bloomberg, yeah, there's Bloomberg. The weazened little wimpy guy. And just within the last couple days, some audio and I presumably some videos come out where he's talked, talking smack about minorities and crime and the stop and frisk and all this. That's going to sink him. That's going to sink him hard. The same way that being a prosecutor and an attorney general sank Kamala Harris. Everybody thought that the secret weapon of the Democrats was going to be Kamala Harris. She's, in her early 50s, she's a woman of mixed minority background. She's was evidently smart enough to get, be elected as a, worked as a district attorney and then became a an attorney general. Everybody thought, hey, she's going to have it. What they didn't do is any analysis, which figured out that the Democratic base does not like people like that. And Tulsi Gabbard took her apart, basically said, yeah, here you are giggling with Howard Stern or somebody about smoking marijuana, yet you're putting people in jail for it. And that sank Harris. That was the one defining moment. Harris was no longer a viable candidate after that. So, but she was their secret weapon for a while. They were going to have the kind of this female Barack Obama, this young black minority Asian woman mix who was going to come out and basically smoke the old white guy Trump the way that Barack Obama smoked the old white guy McCain. So there you have it. So they absolutely have nobody. Once she's gone, face it, Cory Booker couldn't excite anybody. Nobody paid any attention to Cory Booker. And part of it is I don't think he's extreme enough. I think the Democratic Party has fallen into this extremism, and they're just not looking for anybody who does not fit that kind of mold. And that's one of the reasons Biden's falling out. I think Buttigieg will eventually fall out. And so we'll see what happens. But it is definitely going to make for an interesting race. And the problem with Bernie is I don't think this guy could last a whole campaign. The campaign almost crushed Hillary Clinton. Remember, she was wearing those anti-seizure goggles, these big thick, she wasn't wearing those as a fashion statement. Those big goofy, Coke bottle weird glasses. She wasn't wearing, and there was even talk. Remember the talk that she had a double, when people would see her stepping in and out of an SUV or something, that it was actually a double. I mean, man, I tell you what, if you're double for Hillary Clinton, if you can pass for Hillary Clinton, I will help collect money so you can get plastic surgery. So if that person is out there, contact me, and I will help you collect money for plastic surgery if you were indeed a double for Hillary Clinton. I can't think of anything worse. So, yeah, those are the Democratic candidates, and they're headed for a disaster. I don't think Bernie can last. I mean, you're talking about an 80-year-old man who's already had one heart attack on the trail, and if the last election proved one thing, it's a long 6-7 months, and it's grueling, and I don't think he can do it. I don't think Sleepy Joe can do it. Old Quid Pro Joe out there. I mean, if you've seen his town halls, especially the latest one, he's just this old man up there rumbling and rambling and calling one of your it looked to me like he only had about 40 people in the room anyway, but he called one of them a lying dog-faced pony soldier, When she asked him, hey, how did you screw up the Iowa caucus when you were basically the only one who was there and could campaign? Lying dog-faced pony soldier. Okay. Then he's, I think the girl was in kind of shock. She later said she's humiliated, and who wouldn't be to have somebody call you that on national TV. But then they said, well, that's just a comedy line he uses because it came from an old John Wayne movie, except it never did. There's no movie where that is said by John Wayne or to John Wayne or in a John Wayne movie to anyone else. It's like the Corn Pop story. Remember Corn Pop, the big bully who Mighty Joe faced down? Because Corn Pop and a couple of his thug friends had straight razors and were going to cut up Joe. Now, in thinking about this, you got to realize, I think, Hasn't it been since like the 1930s, 1940s maybe? That's when thugs quit carrying straight razors because the majority of men started using safety razors. And you really only saw straight razors in a few barber shops, and you're getting your kind of your high and tight haircut or your kind of your buzz cut, type of deal. They would basically, clean up around your neck and around your ears and all that with a straight razor. And I guess you could get a shave there if you wanted to. But, the straight razor, where do you even buy one? Where would you even buy one? And even going back into Joe's youth, where would you even get one? This just reeks of a story that he heard somewhere that he's putting himself into. And, frankly, you start putting that kind of stuff with a few of his other gaffes, just look at his performance. I mean, Quid Pro Joe is slowing down. He is mentally slowing down, and I think he's actually on, exhibiting signs of senile. That's called senile dementia. He is basically, in 2 years, he'll be eating his tapioca pudding. Somebody will be feeding him his cream corn and his tapioca pudding. I mean, that's just the way it is. Those of us who've had parents go through that or have seen that in older people, I'm telling you, what you're seeing in Joe is you're seeing the onset of senility. That's what you're seeing. And he is really, he's never going to make it. He's never going to make it. And that's why the Democrats are in a panic. Why do you think they tried to impeach Trump? They'll do anything. They know their back's up against the wall. They can run a gay guy, which they know is going to be a disaster. They can run a socialist if he lives long enough and can actually take the nomination. Or they're going to run one of these two, the third grade teacher or the librarian, which they know are going to fall flat. So they don't have anything left. Their secret weapon, Harris, fizzled out, and nobody else is there to step up. Bloomberg's done. Find out he had some kind of racist. The stop and frisk was not racist, but the way he talks about it is racist. He's a racist. I mean, that's just what it is. So it'll be very interesting to see how that goes. Lying dog-faced pony soldier. When you start people looking at that going, that's crazy. What would even prompt somebody to say something like that? I mean, what's he going to do now? Call somebody pilgrim, And remember in Iowa where he went off. That one older guy asked him, "Hey, what about your son, Hunter Biden? How are you going to answer that?" And this was a Biden supporter. Remember, he called him a liar and didn't he call him a fat slob or something? I don't know, something like that. But yeah, it was very, very bad. And Biden's not going to make it. I tell you that right now, they've got a real problem on their hands trying to find a viable candidate. Okay, that is enough for politics. We will now get into some more fun stuff. I one of the companies that every once in a while I get asked, "Hey, what's a good company to buy from?" And I don't keep track of all of them. I don't. And a lot of things happen. Sometimes things happen in the industry that you don't even, you're not even, if you're a consumer like me, I don't sell guns. I don't have anything to do with any of that. So consequently, I see the kind of the consumer side of things. And one of my favorite companies, for a lot of reasons, was DPMS. They sold good AR parts. I've got a DPMS AR, which is very nice gun. It's an A2 style with a heavy barrel. Not anything, which is so commonplace kind of now. People kind of look at it and go, ugh, everybody would yawn. But very, very good gun. Very, very accurate. Very nice gun. And they don't have the. If you look at some of DPMS's parts and things, they're not quite as finished, that's kind of the wrong word, but they're not quite the manufacturing. It's they're good, they're solid, they're functional, and all that. But there's a little bit of that, a little bit of the part, a little bit of the finishing could be improved, probably. But they were very, very good, and for the price, especially when I bought that one, I mean, I didn't have a lot of money, and I wanted it, and that was what I could afford. And I'm not sorry. I love it. I think it's a great gun. But DPMS, They got bought up by Remington. They were in Minnesota. You know, you'd always get them in Minnesota. And so they, you know, and they did several things for me. And I bought quite a few parts from them over the years for this, that, and the other thing. Whenever I needed kind of something, they sold. They were kind of go-to guys for that. But they got bought up by Remington. And of course, you know where this story is going. With a lot of other things, that height of quality and design excellence, TAPCO was bought up by Remington, and LAR and Para Ordnance. All that was bought up by Remington at one time, and they were gonna move it and make it some super company in Alabama. I think Remington has gone broke. You know, they closed their New York factory, the one they've had open since 1807. Kind of a shame that you know, gun companies get run out of states because of liberalism. But you know, hey, it's the way it goes. You know, it's you can't be too nostalgic about that stuff. But anyway, I guess there's still a DPMS website, and it just refers you to Remington. Just says here. I think Remington also had Bushmaster. Yeah, several deals there. You know, so. They were trying to consolidate all this and you know, kind of shuffle this deck of cards and make one conglomerate out of it. And I think it all failed. But anyway, DPMS is kind of gone. I think you can still get some of their products through CDNN and a couple of places like that. But I kind of hated to see them go. Okay, another thing is I got an advertisement to buy Croatian bolt hold open AK mags. And I think it was you got 10 mags for like they had the 80 pardon me, $89. So as usual, I bid. And I do have to say I previously had a Yugo bolt hold open a magazine, which I like very much. I like very much when I shoot an AK to have that do it. Now, as soon as you take the empty magazine out, the bolt closes. So it's not like an AR where you know, the bolt's back and you pop the magazine out, the bolt's still back, you pop the new magazine in and then hit a bolt release. No, you still have to cycle it, but I like it. It's a nice, they're nice magazines to have. So I thought, well, I hope these will be the same quality as, you know, Croatia used to be part of Yugoslavia, so I thought, well, they're probably pretty much the same. I'll risk it. I'll buy the box of these things. So of course I bought it before doing any research. And I did some research and I found a video where, and of course, I found where these things were being sold back in 2016, 2017. And of course, you know, you do the Google search and you get these three or four results and you kind of click on those and it's some forum entry where guys are saying, I don't know, did you see the Rob Ski video on these? If you did, I wouldn't buy them. Immediately my deal goes up going, uh-oh, maybe I've just been flamed. Maybe this was too good to be true, this deal. So I found the video, and frankly, you know, it's more garbage that's put on YouTube. And the worst part about it is garbage videos like this, they get there and they live forever because they're on YouTube until unless the owner takes them down, they're on there. It's basically this guy fumbling around, and he's got three or four AKs, and he's trying to put these magazines in, and his point is, they'll go in, but they won't lock, they'll do this, but they won't do that, they don't really fit, and if you look at the way he's handling it, there's no way they're really gonna kind of do that, they're really going to work. So then he has regular mags that click right into the rifle, so you think, oh, these Croatian ones are garbage. But anyway, I did immediately kind of panic, and what I did was I assembled a couple of AKs, you know, put out some calls to some friends who had 7.62 AKs. And so we got three of them together, and I found that now two of them were Chinese, and one of them was a James River Armory RPK. And basically, the magazines worked in all three. It's a little tight in the James River. And you know, the Chinese guns tend to have a little bit of a slightly larger magazine well. If you put in an AK magazine in there, it has a little bit of side to side wobble. You put these in, they don't wobble. So There could be an issue that these are slightly larger, but it fit the other one just fine also. A little bit tight, but not bad. It certainly didn't impair loading or unloading, taking them in and out. And so I wouldn't worry about them at all. But if all you had ever seen is this video, you would think that they were complete junk. And I don't know who this guy is. I assume he is a member of a former Warsaw Pact army. I don't know if he's old enough to. He appears to be of the age that he's probably a guy who did his military service after the wall came down. So he could have been in any number of countries that used AKs in Eastern Europe. I don't know the guy. I don't know his nationality or anything. He speaks with a slight. That kind of Slavic accent. So, and that really doesn't matter. It doesn't really matter to me. What matters is, hey, give a product a fair shakedown. Give it a fair shakedown, and don't just act the fool with these things. And the way he was kind of trying to slap them in and out to prove that they didn't work just didn't seem to be right to me. And I think my one caveat would be, okay, it is now 2020. His video is a few years old. Maybe the Croatians have tweaked their design slightly. Maybe they have. Didn't look like it to me. They kind of look like the exact same things. They came really kind of nice. They come individually sealed in plastic. Very nice magazines. Very nice quality of manufacture. So I would not hesitate. I don't think I would need any other ones because I got a box of them. But if I did, I would buy those again, definitely. You can't believe everything you see on YouTube. That is for sure. Okay, talking about some other gun culture, gun media news. I was listening. I do listen to other podcasts, and as a matter of fact, there are several podcasts that I think are very, very good. One is Firearms Chat. It's run by a gentleman down in Arizona. Another is the John 1911 podcast, run by two guys who I believe they're either current or one of them is current police officer and the other one is retired. So, you get a lot of different perspectives. The one in Arizona, run by a guy who is a teacher, a soldier, and kind of a reserve deputy, and his podcast partner was a gunsmith. So you get a lot of, just from those two, and I listen to other ones as well. You get kind of some different takes on concealed carry, and this is going to dovetail into a question that one of our listeners has sent in. Just a happy coincidence that this came up, and a question about concealed carry firearms came up. But one of the things I wanted to talk about was, we talk about concealed carry like it's one thing, when actually it's a lot of different things. Broadly speaking, it's carrying a firearm that other people can't see. You have it, other people can't see it. Now, the type of firearm that you're going to carry is going to be very, very different depending on who you are, what your job is, or if you're an armed citizen, an armed civilian. Undercover law enforcement or law enforcement that needs to be somewhat clandestine or somehow low key, that their considerations are completely different in my view. They need the higher capacity. They need a lot of different things. They need the ability to carry extra ammunition because they may be out engaging bad guys in a different manner than most civilians obviously would. So that is whatever their policies are. For civilians, there's kind of a couple different things. And I would say the first thing is that a concealed carry permit is not a super villain or a super villain, superhero cape. Is not a superhero cape. It does not in, it oblige you or basically enlist you into fighting bad guys. It basically means that you can carry a pistol on your person for the defense, of yourself and for people around you. And you know, a lot of for us armed civilians, that is really kind of family. You know, maybe close friends. You're going somewhere, something bad happens, you get them behind you, you back away, and you've got your gun out, or you're handling the problem however it needs to be handled. It does not mean that you see something happen and you run over across the parking lot and intervene. And I say that only as context. It's kind of an individual decision, and it's very situation dependent, and that can be talked about all day long, where you should insert yourself as an armed civilian and where you should not. And I would defer that to legal and other law enforcement experts as to what you should do. But I'm just basically saying that there are people with two different missions. The missions of defending yourself and your family or friends around you immediately is different than the official mission of being a law enforcement agent who's out there, you know, fighting crime. They're two different things. So I always kind of look at it that you're not always going to use the same weapons. Now, it would be very nice if you could, and in many places you can, use the same weapons and same ammunition and everything else. Unfortunately, a lot of times those weapons are very difficult to conceal. So that's the other kind of bridge to cross, is what is actually practically concealable and what is simply a duty gun worn under a light shirt or a vest that, you know, you're probably not going to have with you the whole time. So the considerations as I see them, there's two philosophies for an armed civilian. And one is the concealed carry gun is something that just gets me out of a bad situation quickly, meaning I'm going to fire one or two shots, I'm going to back away, I'm going to present the gun, hopefully the deterrent effect will take place, but I really just need a couple of shots, a few shots to neutralize somebody or to cover, you know, to engage them while I'm retreating, you know, getting out of the area. I'm not going to stand there and be in a slug 'em out gunfight with these guys. My primary goal is to escape. The kind of gun that can do that is kind of where it gets a little sticky. There are people who say, well, if I'm going to be in a shooting situation, regardless of what it is, I want the very best because my life is worth the very best. And if they want to get the $4,000 highly custom piece of equipment, that's fine. That is beyond the means of almost all of us. That is just beyond the means. The $4,000 gun that you carry every day and sweat on and you know, gets rubbed in a holster and all that. That's just not something that we normally do as normal people. Normal middle class people don't do that. So what kind of guns are the most appropriate? And I would say that, you know, you just have to take a look at carrying the gun that you can most afford to lose. The best gun you can afford to lose. So a lot of times that's not the high end. You don't go buy a $2,000 Python, blue steel Python, and rub all the finish off it, get it sweaty and pitted, and you know, if you have to use it, heaven forbid, it gets confiscated by the police. You know, that's just not what happens. Because when I say lose it, you know, if you use it, it will get confiscated by the police, and it's kind of a crapshoot whether you get it back. And I would say in many cases you don't get it back. So therefore it's gone. And what can you actually afford to lose? You juxtapose that with, hey, my life is worth a lot, so I don't really care. If I come out of it and I'm still alive and I lose a gun that's worth X amount of dollars, and I don't really care what that amount is, as long as I'm still alive, I'm going to carry the best. So you have those two things. What can I afford to lose, and do I even care because I'm going to carry the best? And a lot of times that's just dictated by our pocketbook. You know, you can't... a lot of those guns are beyond our means. The other thing that gets a little crazy are guys who are chasing for their concealed carry guns. They're chasing rounds, I call it. It's like, well, This will take a 15-round magazine, but if I can get a +2 deal on there, then get a magwell, and oh, by the way, I also need a, you know, a really nice holster for this. And a nice holster is a really great idea, but, you know, when you start chasing rounds going, I have to get the 19-round magazine is better than the 17-round magazine. Well, I don't know that it is, and I don't know that I would reject a gun simply because it holds 17 and not 19. Or even if it holds 15 and does not hold 17 or 19. I don't know that that capacity beyond 15, and with Browning High Power, you can even bump that down a few. Is the capacity beyond 12 or 13 really going to make a difference? And you can get some very small 9mm guns now that carry 12 rounds, have been able to for a while. So how much do you really need in there? And, you know, that's an individual choice. And is a six-shot revolver a bad choice? Or do you really want to go with the higher capacity automatic? Very interesting. But I think it's a fool's errand to kind of, I have to carry 19 rounds, or I have to carry 20 rounds. Where does it all stop? I mean, nobody knows. Nobody knows where it all stops because everybody wants to carry these high round, high capacity magazines for concealed carry. And I would also say that you're adding weight. Then you're adding a lot of weight. And is it going to be convenient to carry? Is it going to be something that prints because your pants are sagging? And face it, a lot of us have to wear suspenders with some of these holsters because our pants will wind up hanging around our ankles because of all the gun, extra magazines, and all this stuff we're putting on the belt, you know. So, you know, you have to kind of look at weight and what are you going to carry. A lot of times if it's a hassle to put on, you know what's going to happen. It's going to get left home, so those are some of the considerations of concealed carry. And by listening to different podcasts, you get that. The one from Arizona, one of the gentlemen is in a wheelchair. He can get around on crutches and has a prosthetic leg and can get around a little bit that way, but spends time in a wheelchair. You know, and I hadn't really thought about that, man. You're in a wheelchair, you have no possibility of escape. I mean, unless you're on the top of a hill and somehow, you know, you do a back turn and just haul it and just go careening down the hill, you cannot outrun anybody. You cannot escape anybody. And they have a kind of a height and maybe a vision advantage over you. So carrying concealed in that kind of a deal, what kind of a gun, how does that change what you need to carry? That's a lot to think about. And I can say even on a personal level, my wife does not like semi-automatic pistols, and she would much rather defend herself with a revolver. Part of that is you get a little bit of some people have weaker hands, and you get a little bit of arthritis or anything like that that kind of takes away some of the strength of your hands, and semi-automatics aren't a lot of fun. Now, I realize there are a couple of ones with tip-up barrels, but you know, as a general rule, semi-automatics aren't fun, whereas a revolver, not a problem. So there can be people who, just by choice and by circumstance, like a revolver much, much better than they like a semi-automatic. And then if you're in a wheelchair, going back to that, hey, you know, what other considerations are there? You know, is caliber a consideration? Is, you know, how do you carry? Holsters a consideration? Does the usual kind of belt holster work for you if you are seated in a wheelchair? Because, you know, they can be a little clumsy in a car, so a wheelchair might have some of the same deals. Very, very tricky and very, very, you know, a lot of different decisions have to be made. So concealed carry is not the same for everyone. And I would say that, you know, there are a lot of individual choices, and it also is based on a lot of the threat environment you're in. If I will never go any place where I think I'm going to need a concealed carry firearm. I mean, I just won't go there. That's the first rule. Not being where the trouble is a great way to avoid it. There are times, though, when you know face that you have to, and you realize that the risk level is a little bit higher, and you need to go armed. And I've used this little story before, but one time my wife was very, very, she had a bad cold. She woke up in the middle of the night, wanted some different cold medicine and a few other things. So there I was, 1 o'clock in the morning, trudging down to a place that was open all night to get this kind of stuff. Now, even though I live in a fairly decent area, like most people think they live in a decent area, crime still does occur. So therefore, I carried concealed because it just was the prudent thing to do. I wasn't expecting trouble, but I realized the risk had been elevated at least slightly, at least slightly. So there's a lot of trouble that you can avoid by not being there, but there's also times when sometimes you have to go do something for someone else, and if the risk is a little higher, then maybe going concealed carry is better. But a lot of considerations for concealed carry, and that dovetails into my favorite part of the program, which is questions and answers. And this is a great thought-provoking question from our listener, Clown Bear. And it goes, what do you think is the best value concealed carry firearm that isn't from Glock, Smith & Wesson, and Ruger? And that is a tough question because it makes me think, but it's a question I like a lot. I go back to what we were saying earlier, is that a lot of us don't have infinite budgets, and a lot of us have to make do with what we can afford, and I'm certainly one of those people. And so I approach this as, what is the best gun I could get that I could afford to lose? And that kind of takes Smith & Wesson, Glock, and Ruger out of there. So I'll handle the first part of the easy part of this first. I kind of put a $300 cap. If I lost a $300 gun, I wouldn't like it. Hey, I had to use it, and all of a sudden the police grab it, and there you go. So it's kind of $300 top. So I was looking at revolvers. Why would I choose a revolver? Well, revolvers are very reliable. And they're intuitively easy to shoot, and they're quick to bring into action. One of the things I like about them is, if an adversary is 7 yards away, 21 feet, it takes him a second and a half to where all of a sudden he's on top of you, grappling with you, knocking you to the ground, whatever else. So I need something that can come into play very, very quickly. Maybe even from inside a pocket. I'll shoot through my jacket pocket if I have. If it saves my life, I'm willing to do that. So I thought a revolver is a very, very good gun for that. And so I kind of looked and saw what revolvers were available. What I think is best value on kind of the revolver market, which is tough because they don't make revolvers like they used to. Used to be that kind of the common low-end revolvers were Smith & Wesson Model 10s, Colt Police Positives, and Detective Specials. All those were, moderately priced and affordable. That was the market. That was the market. Nowadays, those things are all gone, so the market is been left to others. So the two that I would come up with, and I'll go with my least favorite choice first of the two, and that would be the Rock Island M200 and M206. The only difference being barrel length. The first one is 4 inches, the next one's 2 inches. The reviews I've read of it, and these are not beautiful revolvers. The reviews I've read of them though, they function, they work, they're sufficiently accurate. They come with a very nice kind of a parkerized finish, so they're not going to rust. You keep them oiled, they're not going to rust. And they're not going to wear like a blued finish. And if they do, so what? You're into this thing for, I think the prices I saw were about 210, 220, 225, right in there, the low 200s. you know, that's a gun you can use, protect yourself with, and afford to lose. It's not the gun that you're going to take to the barbecue and impress everyone with. But if it works, beauty is as beauty does. But it is kind of a blocky revolver. I would say that those two revolvers, what they remind me of, are like the Smith & Wesson Victory model and Colt Commando model of World War II, the Parkerized, utilitarian, not fancily finished, but usable guns. So that's one right there, and I would feel okay with either of those. The next one I'd use, actually, and I've been very uncharitable to Taurus revolvers in the past. I've told you my story about trying to buy a Tracker and couldn't find one that was functioning correctly in the store. But the Rossi 856, I know a former police guy, police officer. He basically says, hey, it's a good gun. It's okay. It's good to go. So, I mean, I would go with that. That's about $250 to $270, I think. That's right in that ballpark there. So, I would say that those are very, very good, very, very good guns that you could go with. The nice part is they're 6-shot, 38 special. The Rossi is plus P rated. The other one says limited plus P, which tells me don't use plus P. And I'm not a real plus P fan out of a 2-inch gun anyway, so the Rossi would probably, for the most part, just get regular, you know, whatever 38 hollow points I could get my hands on. So that's where I would go for a revolver. And that's really kind of an easy question to answer for as far as a revolver goes, because really there aren't that many revolvers on the market. You can certainly, and I've excluded, you know, because surplus deals come and go, and somebody can say, but for $249, I can buy a Smith & Wesson Model 10 from, you know, so-and-so sales, but, you know, a month from now, they're all gone, so you can't really count on that. These are kind of new guns that you can get on. There's always used guns that you can look at, and sometimes you might get a deal, sometimes you might not, but for new guns and a kind of a consistent supply, those would be the ones I would go with. For a semi-automatic, it's a lot harder question, and I would say if you want best value being a key word, I would say that you're looking at performance vis-a-vis durability and reliability. And so I would say what will give you that are some of these police trade-ins you see at Classic Firearms, CDNN, and a few other places. If you look, you can find, especially in 40 caliber now, those are on the market. A lot of the agencies are moving back to 9mm. And frankly, I think for concealed carry, the extra power of a 40 is nice because you don't, in my opinion, you don't need the capacity. So, you know, having 12 rounds of 40 is, I think, probably more valuable than having 17 rounds of 9mm. That's just my viewpoint. And those can be had, and there's all kinds, and you don't actually need to exclude Smith & Wesson and Glock, because there are 40 Smith & Wesson MP pistols, and there's some 40 caliber Glocks that are out there, as well as SIGs and all kinds of other things that are out there. Those represent the best value on the market. And, of course, they're going to come in full-size models, but they do occasionally sell compacts, you know, kind of the models a detective might use. And that's really, I think, where you would get great value for concealed carry. And they usually cost a few bucks more. Is the finish going to be perfect? No, but who cares? You're going to carry it around. What you're looking for in any CCW firearm is durability and reliability, and those guns will deliver that. They will deliver that. Another option I would look at beyond that, and you know, it can right about that price range, right in the same price range, is a Thesis. this company in Turkey makes an M1911A1 clone, which is apparently right on. Apparently it's right on the money. It is a USGI 1911A1, essentially. If that kind of pistol appeals to you, these things are selling for, I think, $330, you know, and then, of course, you're going to have some sort of shipping or something, and, you know, so maybe $350 type of a deal, but you're getting, you know, something of a known quantity, and the nice part I like about it is, now, granted, you're going to have the same magazine capacity issues that a 1911A1 has, which, but I don't know that that's all that important, but you do have the ability to get all kinds of magazines, and some magazines made by great manufacturers, Wilson Combat, Chip McCormick's are good, all these kind of high-end 1911 magazines will work in this gun, and, you know, that's really good. That's a very, very attractive feature, because some of these other guns, there are a lot of other guns out there that take almost proprietary magazines. So, you know, if you can get one that takes a common magazine, that's going to, availability and price are going to be on your side. So I would look at those. I would not look at the most compact versions of that 1911A1, simply because I don't like those from any manufacturer. It seems that they can be fraught with problems. And again, they use a different magazine. I think standard magazines might work in them, but I know that, you know, to fit flush with the bottom, they take a special magazine and only hold 6 rounds or whatever it is. But I would definitely give that a look. There's other ones out there. There's Canix that are made in Turkey. There's, you know, some other lower end type semi-automatics made in Europe. I'm very careful of those because, okay, you can sometimes get these guns on sale for under $300, but if the magazine is, if it comes with one magazine and you can't get more, you're stuck. You're really stuck. Or if it comes with a magazine that you can only occasionally get and it's $60, then you're stuck again. You may as well have taken that extra money, bought something else that takes a lot less expensive magazines. So that's what I would do. I would actually look really hard at the 40s. Also, 357 SIGs are out there. Some agencies are trading those in. Very powerful caliber. You know, that is a good gun. That's something I would look at. I would look very, very hard at those. But you can find deals that are not Ruger, Smith & Wesson, and Glock, to reference back to the original question. I will tell you that, and again, this is kind of the surplus deal, so these things are going to dry up shortly. And, you know, you also have to make sure you get a couple extra mags, because they only come with one. But the Star BM was a nice little commander-sized 9mm 1911-like pistol. Very nice, very comfortable to shoot. A little bit heavy, but I would say that, you know, I'd rather have that than have some other problems, because it's all steel. Nice gun, handles and feels very much like a smaller 1911, which is very comfortable to a lot of people. And it can handle, I'm sure, any 9mm ammo. It's pretty robust. The only drawbacks are you got to make sure that you get some magazines, because while they may be on the market now, 5 years from now, there may not be very many, or you may have to buy them at gun broker for some outrageous price. The other thing is spare parts are not very easy to find. Now, 1911 parts may or may not be adapted, because it does have a pivot trigger rather than a push trigger. So it may be a challenge if something inside breaks, but they're such durable guns, I don't see that as being a huge problem anyway. And the one, there are some out there that are very inexpensive. They're $179. Now, they're not going to be beautiful. They're going to have some surface pitting and everything, but they'll be functional. Functional, but not beautiful. $179. How can you go wrong? How could you really go wrong? Even just as a gun, that's a fun gun to have, you know. So those are all viable options. But I would definitely go. I'd definitely look at the trade-in market to get best value. That's where I would go. Okay, next question. Have you ever restored a rescue project gun? Oh, Jesus. that's the story of my life sometimes. Yes, I have. Yes, I have indeed. And, you know, it's sort of like a crack addiction. A crack addiction. You start out and you start getting, you know, you get a few things here and there, and you, like, an Arsenal Rebuild 03A3, which, you know, back in the day was a $100 rifle. Well, then you say, well, you know, it's got a couple of screws that are kind of buggered up here, you know, where somebody took a bad screwdriver and took it apart, and they messed up the slot on the screw. So you get some USGI screws and replace them, and it all looks nice. And it kind of starts from there, you know, and you kind of go up and, you know, over from there. And it's a lot of fun. It's a lot of fun. I have an old Berthier rifle, French Berthier World War I. Of course, everything's matching. Everything's perfect, except the bore isn't worth a hoot. So, in the beginning, it didn't have a sling. It didn't have a bayonet. It didn't have a stacking swivel. You know, and over the years, I kind of collected those little bits up. And now I tried to shoot it, but it really, well, the first time I shot it, I made a mistake, and I will share this with everyone. I used ball end ammunition, which was a machine gun round version of the 8mm Lebel. And now they did modify some rifles that would take it, but they were marked with an N on the chamber. Well, I did not know any of this. So predictably, the only 8mm Lebel ammo I could find was unmarked ball N. I fired it in an unmodified rifle, and only about half of them would chamber. And I thought, oh, this is just, well, half of them work, so this must be just some crappy ammunition. And actually, the rifle, everything held up fine. In spite of my own stupidity and ignorance, it held up fine. But the bore of the rifle just is towards the muzzle is just badly worn, and it's not turning out any kind of usable accuracy. So I'm going to have it counterbored. Basically, you know, if it doesn't have any value as a shooter, it doesn't really have any collector value. And but having a counterboard, I might be able to get back into the good rifling and get some usability out of it. And you know, that would be a lot of fun if that happens. So that's a good project gun. There have been a few others over time where, you know, you kind of one was you know, a rescue from a local gun shop. Went in, and this is when I lived on some property. It was like 10 acres. And I wanted a gun that I could just carry around that I didn't have to worry about. So I saw it. I go into a local gun shop, up on the wall, incredibly cheap, is a Smith & Wesson Model 624, 44 Special end frame. And, you know, so I asked to look at it, and the gun had been scuffed around a little bit. You know, it had been used, but it's not bad. And then I saw the real reason it was so cheap. Someone had tried to convert it into a round butt, and they basically didn't do a very good job. It still functioned, still was fine, but it was really pretty ugly. So, for basically a song, I got this revolver, and then I got some round butt to square butt grips, which were, I think they were about $100 too. I think they were like $109, and because there's not a big market for those, as you can understand. And I had to do a little bit of inletting, but essentially the revolver looks okay now. Now, if you take the grips off, it doesn't look okay, but it looks okay now. And basically, I used to carry that in a Bianchi X15 shoulder holster, and You know, we had a small motorbike, and I would ride around on the property with that and carry, you know, and that was just a gun you could slip on and go. And, you know, 44 special hollow points were great. You know, it's a nice gun, and but it is not so tremendously beautiful. I mean, it has been used, and it's there. But I did kind of bring it back from the dead and save it from the horrors of the local gun shop that it was in. Well, I actually have another one that relates to the next question. I did have an old, through some wheeling and dealing, through some trading, I got a hold of a pretty beat up Colt 38 Super, and it was in pretty sorry condition. The it had been cold blue, it had no finish, it had been cold blued, somebody had buffed all the markings off. I mean, but it was still functional. The barrel was completely, it looked like they'd fired corrosive ammunition in it for years and never cleaned it, which they never made corrosive ammunition for it, so I don't know how it got so messed up, but it did. So, anyway, to make a long story short, I come into this. I have the gun parkerized. I have a Barstow drop-in barrel put in, and I had some sights put on it, you know, real sights put on it. And you know, had the trigger replaced because it had been messed up too. And it's a nice gun. Is it worth anything? Is it worth even what I put into it? No, but you know, I saved it from being just a piece of junk that would have been, you know, stripped for parts or something. So those are the ones that I have saved. And that dovetails into our next question. Opinion on the 30, what is your opinion on the 38 Super cartridge? Well, as you know, I obviously shoot one, so frankly, its time has come and gone. It's a good cartridge. There's nothing wrong with it. I think it's been eclipsed by 357 SIG. I think that you know, the law, it's okay in a 1911 style gun. It's fine. It's basically kind of like those cartridges that it really was a part of. You know, the 38 Super is really just the old Colt 38 Auto that has been loaded to plus P plus levels. And you cannot use super ammunition in the older guns, even though they will fit, because, you know, they're loaded to a lot higher pressure. But there were never a lot of those around to begin with, and that's why you don't hear stories of the old guns blowing apart all the time, because there weren't that many of them. Now they're all collector's items. So it's solved itself. But the old Colt 38 Auto, which is dimensionally identical to the 38 Super, it's just like the old 9mm Largo, 9mm Steyr, probably another, isn't there a 9mm Bergman or something out there that's the same, you know, kind of that long 9mm Browning Long is in there somewhere. You know, some of these kind of cartridges have really fallen by the wayside. It's kind of like those, only more powerful. It was a darling for USPSA for a while, IPSC, because you could get the wide body gun, you could get a 17 round magazine, and you could hot load it to make major caliber if you had a supported barrel, not a ported barrel, supported barrel. You had to modify the gun and everything so that the case head was completely enclosed, or else it would just blow out the bottom. So all of those things made it, and for about 5 or 6 years, it was the hottest thing going. Then somebody figured out that you could take the same thing and kind of, it has a semi-rim on it, okay, which for an auto pistol can create some difficulties. Although it really helps with the extraction, I think. But anyway, they came up with a rimless version of it and called it 356 Team Smith & Wesson or some nonsense like that. And, you know, people shot it for a while. Now people don't shoot it anymore because nobody gives it a hoot about making major anymore in these competitions. Everybody shoots 9mm because it's cheap, the guns hold a lot. You know, you can buy an off-the-shelf 9mm that holds 19 rounds, so why would you fumble around with a 38 Super, which is doing the same thing, you know, and has more recoil? The 9mm guns are a lot more controllable. So 38 Super, I like it. It's cool, but it's past its day. And it never really caught on in where I think its niche really was. The niche for the 38 Super, the ideal gun, and again, this is Colt we can blame for this, was the Colt Combat Commander, you know, the shortened version. The slide is shortened by, you know, 3/4 of an inch. A 1911. Very nice guns. When they're in this, they had the Commander, which was aluminum frame, and the Combat Commander, which was steel frame. Those were the guns the 38 Super should have shined in. And had they put, you know, kind of a decent adjustable sight on that, maybe a few little enhancements, like a little bit larger safety, you know, and beveled the magazine wells, done a few things like that, that would have been incredibly popular. As it was, it just sort of languished and never really realized its full potential. The only other 38s, and everybody who made a 1911 clone has made a 38 Super, whether it's Spain, Llama, or, you know, I think Rock Island makes them, and all their subdivision types of 38 Supers. I don't think Car Arms makes one anymore. They used to, I think. Or not Car Arms, but the old Auto Ordnance used to. But anyway, a lot of 38 Supers were out there. But they just don't, you just don't really see them anymore. And I think the Commander-sized gun was the perfect envelope for that. And had they done that, and it would hold 9 rounds, maybe 10 with one in the chamber. And, you know, that was a pretty cool, with modern magazines, maybe they could up it to 11. Maybe with a slight extended magazine, 12 rounds. Hey, then you're starting to compete with things in a 1911 platform anyway. So, you know, there you are. That was a great one. The only other 38 Super that I think would have been very cool was there were 38 Super Thompson submachine guns made. The FBI allegedly still has some, but I've never really seen, I'm sure in some reference books there's some pictures of them somewhere, but they've never made that in the semi-automatic version, although they did make a 10mm version, which would have been interesting. But that's the 38 Super cartridge. Okay, our last question. Are there any potential or current brace pistols that you would consider to be useful? And that's like the AK and AR pistols that have the ATF approved pistol arm brace on the back, which becomes a kind of a de facto small stock and all that. Are there any of those you would consider useful? And I would have to say my first inclination is the answer is no. They are not useful. But I sit there and I sometimes think, what would I use one of these for? Or what would cause me to need one of these? The only thing I can think of would be for like undercover guys or clandestine carriers of weapons. And all I can really think of in this case is like responding to school shooting type situations, which thankfully we haven't seen those in a while. You know, a guy who's an officer, security officer or law enforcement officer, he's got a backpack on and one of these things is folded up in the backpack and it's tiny. And to take on an assailant who's got a pump shotgun or a rifle or a handgun of some type, that would give him a pretty good edge. So I think, is that a situation where, you know, clearly you don't want to be carrying an M4 around a school everywhere, and a backpack that will conceal even a normal-sized M4 is going to be a bit large. So these might have a niche there. Personally, I don't really see it, but that's the only thing I could think of. The best one they could come up with, and I don't know if they could get it approved, but, you know, remember the old Czech VZ-61 Scorpion? You know, kind of that curved magazine-fed 32 ACP, kind of a cross between a pistol and a submachine gun. Now, if they could take the folding stock on that and essentially make it within the guidelines of a pistol brace, but still keep it with its original contours, so it would look basically the same, and it would be legally the size of a pistol brace, but you could still fold it over the top and be very cool with it and all that. Now that would be very cool. That would be very, very cool to have. And I'm surprised nobody's tried to crank one of those out. You can get them with, the AR style brace. They look horrible. They just, the original one was so good because it folded over the top, could fit in a shoulder holster, all those kind of things. And again, does it have a security application? Well, the VZ61 is a good, outside of the caliber, it was a very good envelope, and you could probably they did experiment at least commercially in making some in Makarov, 9mm Makarov, so that would be a little bit more effective caliber than 32 ACP. So, that would be the only other that'd be the only other one, but as a whole breed, I don't see much use for them unless it's some kind of deep clandestine cover where you need that kind of a firearm, but you absolutely cannot afford to have the standard weapon envelope. So that's it for this edition of Old School Guns. Remember, hit the like button, hit the follower button, or you can be like our friend Clown Bear and submit us a question anytime. The rest of these questions I pick up in different places. A lot of times they're just asked of me in person, so I don't always remember who attributes them to me because I'm usually not smart enough to write them down. So, and at the time, I usually write them down a little bit later when I still remember them. So, anyway, go ahead and do that and submit any questions you have. And this is, until next time, this is Old School Guns out.